Om Shanti. This morning at around about 5 o'clock, I was asked to be here this evening with you and asked also what topic would I like to talk about. And it's something I've been churning about a lot lately, which is the whole theme of communication, but more not the official communication in the Agya, more the communication as the basis of our relationships, the sense of life and even service is there only because of the relationships we can build, and it's through the way we communicate with the world that we relate to it and we relate to each other. Baba had to come here to speak his message. He couldn't do it from up there, just sort of trying to vibrate his message out, because he had to put it in, let's say, black and white. He had to register the words. And his message basically is the way we understand the words that he says. The way Baba communicates with us is a show of how we should communicate. The way he meets us, the impact he has on us. When he, just 2 days ago, we had the experience. Baba's presence is majestic, and his impact is undeniable. And all of us feel great by the way he sees us and interacts with us and speaks to us. The way he uses that equals us face and eyes and expressions and the smile, the divine smile. The way he perceives us and sees what is best in us and is not interested in the rubbish, even though he knows it's there. And his way of delivery is fantastic. Do you agree? And he's there as a model. And when Baba says become like me, certainly it includes the way Baba communicates. And so the question is, what is the sort of impact that we have on the world around us as individuals? Ask yourself this question. Are people happier when you arrive or when you leave? Or are they indifferent? They just didn't notice your existence. Because those three ways are the way that you are communicating with the world around you. Do you have an impact that causes happiness in others? Or do you have an impact that causes perhaps fear? Or at least caution? People are afraid of you, or people are they have to think twice about what they're going to say to you. Maybe it's because you're too sensitive, and so the impact that you have makes the other person become cautious of what he says. Or you don't have any much impact at all. You are there, you stay, you sit in the corner, and people don't notice that you're there. because you're not communicating with what's happening. Maybe you're lost in your own head. Maybe you're stuck in the past, or you're afraid, or you're timid. And Baba of course says that timidity is a form of body consciousness, isn't it? So when we ask ourselves that question, it's a great check, isn't it? Are people happier when I arrive or when I leave? Then, of course, Baba wants us to have what sort of impact on others? Baba wants us to make others happy. So, how do I communicate in such a way that makes people feel happy? How do I disarm myself in the way that I communicate so that people don't feel defensive? Because if I arrive armed with an idea, people will defend themselves. And so I'd like to share some ideas about the essence of communication. What is it? At least in the English language, communication comes from Latin, communicare, which means to share what you have in common. That means that the first effort of a communicator is to identify what they have in common with the person that's in front of them. So, one may be the president of a big corporation, and the other may be the gatekeeper of the same building. But what do they have in common? They don't have the same personality, they don't have the same face, they don't have the same background or educational qualifications. Maybe they don't have the same color or the same sex. But they have in common at least two things. They are souls, and therefore they have the same original qualities, and they are both looking for happiness. So if I don't make that effort to establish what I have in common with the person who's in front of me, there's no bridge between me and the person that's there. So the commonness, the commonality is the bridge. No bridge, no crossing. Have you ever talked to somebody and you felt that they were not listening to you? Yeah? Or one's looking at the window and the other's looking at the door, and there are two conversations going on and they don't meet? Like ships passing in the night, you know. No meeting. So if you communicate, you meet, right? Do you meet when you communicate? Do you make the bridge so that there is transit between one and the other? And that's a big effort. In fact, that is the effort. That is the basis of being soul conscious when you're interacting with others. I'm a soul, he's a soul. We both come from the same place. We are both children of the same father. We both want to be happy. Okay, so let's speak. Because there are three things in communication. There's the one who's sending the message. There's the one who's receiving the message. And there is the message itself. Three things. And those three things can become very difficult for example, what I want to say is not necessarily the same as what I do say. What the person hears is different from what he thinks he hears. Then, of course, the way that person retains what I say, and the sixth thing, what he transmits to others. Have you been in a conversation like this? Look, I told you the other day that we should do this and this and this. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. No, you didn't. I did so. I remember exactly where you were when I told you. You were standing by the stair and I said this and this and this and this. No, you didn't. Has that ever happened to you? No, no. Hands up. Everyone, yeah. So you see, the mechanism gets in the way. Because on one side there's a point of light, and the other side there's a point of light. And those points of lights are expressing themselves, maybe in a different frequency, right? And what comes out from the point of light, the first thing that's around it is called the mind. The mind is the first expression of the impulse that comes from the soul. And of course the mind may be shaky, it may be unstable, it may be galloping, it may be in the past, it may be in the future. Generally it's not in the present. It's not there, right? So you have a problem. Then of course the expression is coming out. And then there's a second layer around it, which is the intellect, which tries to organize that expression. So you've got an expressor, and you've got an organizer of the expression, and not necessarily is a good organizer. Maybe the associations are wrong. Maybe the memories are not the right ones. And of course, in the third way, you've got the barriers of the personality. You know, that's the third layer. So between the two points of light, which may not be necessarily on the same frequency, you've got two minds, two intellects, and two personalities. So you've got six things that can go wrong between one point of light and the other. Now, of course, what do we need to bear in mind? I'll give you an example of this. You are coming to see a person with whom you have a problem. Of course, no one here has problems with anyone, right? Yeah? So you're coming to see someone with whom you have some difficulty, with some karmic account. And all of us have one or two or three favorite karmic accounts. And so that person is coming. And so what comes up is the image or many images of that person that have already been recorded in you. So here comes, let's say the person in your view is a liar or is not honest. So what do you do? Okay, here comes Mr. Dishonest. Now I'm going to organize myself because he's dishonest, right? Now maybe in the view of the other person I'm Mr. Irresponsible, right? So because I've done a few things in the past that were not particularly responsible, and that person's got an image of me in his mind, I've got an image of that person in my mind. I don't talk to the soul. I talk to the image that I have of that person in my own head. And that person's also talking to the image that he or she has of me in their head. So isn't it strange? You've got two people apparently talking to each other, but in fact they're not talking to each other. Both of them are talking to their own sanskars. And that's why we don't listen. We can't listen to what's coming through. There's my rival. So how would you talk to a rival? There's the person that I'm jealous of. There's the person who's making things difficult for me. There's the person who, you know, is the in charge of the department of paper clips in the centre. And now I'm working in that department, and that person is very bossy, right? So I'm in front of a bossy person. So both sides change themselves around so that they fit with the image that they have of each other. And they don't talk. They don't communicate. And they maybe talk, but they don't communicate. And that's why 2 weeks later on, do you remember when I said to you this and this and this? No. Because I was more worried at the time that the person said what he was saying about the relationship than I was about the message. The message didn't get through. And then later on you hear someone say, how many hundreds of times do I have to tell you to do this and to do this and to do this? Have you ever heard someone say that? Have you ever said something like that? How many hundreds of times do I have to say? First of all, if you are saying something like that, you are declaring to the universe that you are a terrible communicator. Because if you have to say something hundreds of times, it means that your message has never gotten across. Generally, arrogant people think that they are great communicators, but they end up being the worst because they don't make the effort to see what they have in common with the person in front of them. And generally, it's the arrogant people that say, how many hundreds of times do I have to say this to you? I give up. You know, you never listen. I've been listening all the time, but, you know, I've never been able to understand what you've been saying to me. And so a good communicator has three things, always. And they all start, in English anyway, they start with R. The first thing, right. Is what I'm going to say right? According to the Srimad, maybe. According to the time? Is it the right moment? Is it the right situation for me to say what I'm going to say? All of us speak out of time, don't we? You know, it's exactly the worst moment for me to say what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. Yeah? Because you can't control, as Daddy Gulzar likes to say, these 2.5 inches of organ called the tongue. If people say, let's have a balance between head and heart, and in the middle of the road there's a tongue, and of course this balance gets out of, you know, there's a fight between head and heart here, more or less. You say what you don't want to say. You don't say what you do want to say. You want the person to understand when the person is not prepared to understand because he's not in the right moment. So is what I'm going to say right, first of all? Means is it true? Or is it hearsay? Or have I heard from a third or a fourth or a fifth person? This is how gossip is so destructive. So, is it right? Why should I say things that are not right? Yeah? There was a story about Socrates and one of his students. And he came up to Socrates and said, "Look, I want to tell you about this other student." And he's been doing terrible things, you know, started to gossip. And Socrates said, "First of all, before you open your mouth, I don't want to listen to it, but before you open your mouth, consider, is it right what you're going to say?" Well, that's not. I don't know if it's right, but you need to know. Yeah. And he continued. He tried to say more. "Well, wait a minute. Second, is it useful?" "Well, I don't think it's very useful what I'm going to say, but you need to know." And he continued. You know. He said, "Wait a minute. Third thing. Is it respectful? Is it right, useful, and respectful what you're going to say?" "So I don't think I'll keep my respect if I say, but you need to know." So Socrates said, "Wait a minute. If it's not right and it's not useful and it's not respectful, why should you open your mouth?" So that's the first thing we have to check. Is it right what I'm going to say? Is it the right moment? Is that person in the right mood? Have I taken their pulse and I've found out, you know, I've checked its correctness. It's a true thing what I'm going to say. It's a useful thing. It won't destroy the respect, so I will say it. Imagine if you cut out of your conversation anything that was not right, useful, or respectful. How much would you say? Yeah? Maybe we'd be a bit much more silent, wouldn't we? You see, it's often, you know, because of these six filters, because of the filters, mind, intellect, and sanskars of everybody, most situations get distorted through speaking about them. If not all situations. So let's limit ourselves to the things that we see ourselves and not be influenced by hearsay. "Look, I saw this. He did that. He said like this." But who's communicating that information is someone whose mind, intellect, and sanskars has already filtered it. I remember with Nirvibhaya, someone came up to him in sort of a modern Socrates way, and tried to tell Nirvibhaya about the terrible things that one sister was doing. And Nirvibhaya said, "Look, I don't want to hear. I don't want to change my vision of that soul through what you're going to say. So keep it to yourself." And of course the person shut up, right? Let's keep our vision of people and things relative to our own experience and try to put Baba in between even to help us to see them. We would have much less to say than we do. We would have much less to converse about at the dinner table than we do. Just say useful things, respectful things, and true things. And again, Baba says how to say things. He says, speak little. Of course, if you're just speaking respectful, true, and useful things, you will speak little. Speak softly and speak sweetly. Right? That's what Baba says. Because if you speak a lot, it's proportional to the way that people pay attention to you. Because if you speak too much, people will pay less attention to you. If you speak little, and when you do speak, what you do speak is true, respectful, and significant in some way, useful, every time you open your mouth, people will pay attention to you. That's what Baba says. So the first R is right. Am I right in what I'm going to say? If you've got an attitude of correcting, for example, anyone have that mania? The corrective mania? You're the teacher of the other one? Who says you're a teacher of your brother? You're a fellow student, right? Anyone get into teacher mode with the people in front of them? Because you've lost it. Because the person sees you as a brother or a student, and there you are trying to act as the teacher. Who is our teacher? One teacher. We are all students. So if you're in teacher mode, you're a terrible communicator. Because there's no sharing. You want that person to understand. You want to inject your wisdom into that nothing that's in front of you. Because you are so wise and you know everything. And that person doesn't know anything at all. And he needs to bow down before your ego. Yeah? So, correcting, again, let's go back to the Latin. I'm sorry for other languages, but to correct in Latin comes from the same root as rectitude. So, to correct means to act with rectitude, righteousness. To act with righteousness. To correct. So if you try to correct somebody in an incorrect manner, you'll never be able to do it. Never. And sometimes the way you act to correct is much worse, 1,000 times worse, than the mistake that you're trying to correct. Is that right? So, if you want to correct, be correct. Be right. Again, if you try to call attention to someone's weaknesses, they will defend them. You will strengthen their weaknesses rather than make them diminish. Baba says instead, call attention to people's virtues. And when they're in that nice feeling and seeing their true self, then maybe, you can mention something about something that's not so correct. But even then, maybe. But if you call attention to their defect, that you'll strengthen that defect and therefore you'll defeat your purpose. Anyone, if you look at history, any persecuted people have only become stronger by persecution. In that persecution, they have renewed their faith in what they believe that was actually being challenged. So look at history. So if you try to persecute somebody, and many of us try to, as Baba says, take the law into our own hands. If you take the law into your own hands and try to persecute somebody, you are actually making what you're trying to correct stronger. So, if you are correct in the true sense of the word, you probably won't need to correct anyone. Imagine if we came up in front of Baba and he started with, you know, what did you do the other day, you terrible person? You know, why did you do this? How would we feel? We'd probably feel fried, right? You know, we'd sort of dry up. How could we rescue our self-respect, you know, under the supreme persecution? No way. So if you want to be a mini-god and take the law into your own hands, even if Baba doesn't do it, I mean, what right do you have? What right do you have to correct somebody? When Baba himself does it in such a nice way. You know, so get out of the teacher mode. We're students together. No one's a teacher of anyone here. In an administrative setup within the yajna, that's a different matter. Because there is a line of command. And when you want to do something, you need to consult and inform that system of command. But that system of command has nothing to do with our relationships as human beings. So you may have a center in charge and a student talking about service and organizing service. Okay, fine. There is a hierarchy and a protocol to obey. But when we're interacting as brothers and sisters and students together, there's none of that. Problem is, people confuse their role in service and think that it gives them the right to be the in charge of the relationship as well. Yeah? Big mistake. Big, huge, enormous mistake. We are together as Baba's children. We're learning very deep and complex things sometimes, even though there is a simplicity in it. And if that's my attitude, first attitude, Baba says like this, okay, balance of love and law, fine. But the face of law is love. The face of law is love. That's Baba's words. So how do I love? Only if I see our spiritual context before any other context. The spiritual context is always first, and then the service context. Family is first. School second. Organization third. Yeah? Baba's given us service to sort our own sanskars out, really. So the first R of this story is right. Am I right about my information? Am I right in the way that I speak? Is it the right moment? Is it the right situation? Yeah? The second R is relevance. Is it relevant? Because people will not pay attention to something that is not relevant to them. They won't be able to. So, you know, you may be sharing what you think is the greatest jewel of wisdom in the universe, and for the person that's listening to you, it's absolutely no relevance. And then you think, why doesn't he understand? You know, the basis of a conflict is that idea. why doesn't he understand the way I understand? I don't understand, how come he doesn't understand how I understand? It's not possible that he does not understand what I understand. It's ridiculous. Everyone will understand things in a slightly different way because they've had different experiences. They've got different aims. Even within the big aim, they've got little aims that are different. We all want to be Lakshmi Narayan, but probably in our own different ways. You just compare the Muli notes of everyone. Everyone's written down different things. Why? Why? Because they want different things from Baba. What's relevant for them today, that's what they'll put down. They will not even hear what's not relevant even. Later on they won't remember. They may listen to it. So you've got to make sure, and this is an effort. Okay, first of all, you check the rightness of what you're going to say. Secondly, you check the relevance. Now, how do you make something relevant to somebody? You involve them. You engage them. For example, to make something relevant, a very simple trick is to ask their opinion. Not a trick. But if you ask somebody's opinion about something, they've gotten involved. Now, what do you think if we do things like this? Instead of going there and saying, look, I thought that we should do things like, okay? And the person sitting there like yeah. Now, what did that person understand about what his role or her role is? If they don't have any role or any interest, even to the extent of an opinion, they won't get involved in what you're saying. They switch off. So try to be relevant and you'll be a better communicator. Try to make things relevant to the person that's in front of you. And of course that means listening more. It's not just listening physically. It's got your antennas up and you're picking up, okay, what's happening with the person in front of you? What's going on there? What's his mood? How can I make this person interested? We have to learn to change our own language also, right? So if you say all the time, have you ever heard somebody say, nobody cooperates with me? Okay, well, there's something wrong there, huh? Especially if the same person says hundreds of times, nobody cooperates. That person is declaring to the world that he's not able to inspire people to cooperate. So the real question is not, why don't people cooperate? The real question is, how do I inspire people to cooperate? Change your language. Change the way you explain things to yourself. If you're in a bad or a sad mood, it's because you're explaining things to yourself in the wrong way. Try to use Baba's filters. How does Baba explain that situation? Baba's, and we hear the daddy saying a lot in Hindi, koi badne, means, doesn't matter. It's okay. Not a big deal. Nothing is a big deal, right? You tell me, give an example of a big deal. You probably won't be able to. Especially if you're sitting side by side with Bab Dada and looking at the situation. Not a big deal. Easy, right? Baba wants us to be easy yogis, right? And an easy yogi is someone who sits together with Baba and watches the scenes. So, is it relevant? The third R is relationship. That's the big one. Every time I communicate, I'm relating to somebody. I'm improving, or I'm improving a relationship, or I'm diminishing the strength of the relationship by the way I communicate. That's why the first question when we started today, are people happier when you arrive or when you leave? And that is the strength of your impact on them. You know, or you simply don't relate. You can imagine communicating without relating. Not possible. You have to relate to somebody to communicate with them. To do that also you have to be, you know, very attentive. That's why we get born with two ears and one mouth. Have to listen twice as much. Sometimes we act as if we have three mouths and no ears. You know, in a verbal conflict, of course, no one here has any verbal conflicts, right? Any of ever had a verbal conflict with somebody? Ever? No. Right? In a verbal conflict, you've got two monologues. Because neither side is actually listening to the other. And it's funny because you've got a situation, and generally, you can only have a conflict with somebody if you share something with them. It can be an idea, a project, a marriage, children, a job, a company. You share some aim. Now, if you don't share anything with somebody, you won't have one. It's impossible to have a conflict with someone that you don't share, even if it's the same space in the traffic. You know, you're trying to occupy the same space as another car. You're trying to share that space, right? So you won't have a fight with somebody that you're sharing something with. Now, how to get out of the fight? Even if the other person doesn't participate, you have to see the situation that you share with them, which is in fact the field, let's call it the field of relationship. What we share with others is the field of relationship. We relate in that field. Yeah? So I'm here, the other person's there, but we have something in common. You've probably seen scenes, maybe in your own household or family, where mum and dad are fighting away and little Johnny in the corner, 6 years old, is saying, "Mummy, Daddy, don't fight." And they don't even hear little Johnny crying. Little Johnny is who they have in common, his welfare. And they've forgotten that. And they're seeing each other's defects. So what do we have in common? We have service. But paradoxically, service is the most cause of our conflicts. And some Brahmins deal with conflicts in the best way possible, which is to collaborate and to see and to share what you have in common. Others try to avoid them and stick their head in the sand. You know, conflicts are healthy. Maybe I'm saying something that's not so, let's say, paka here. What I'm saying is that the dynamics of conflict, if you work it out, it's extremely healthy. Especially if you're able to deal with the things, the misunderstandings, as soon as they happen even. And in the nicest way possible. But if you sweep them under the carpet, 6 months down the road, they're too difficult to deal with because they've accumulated. Too difficult and too expensive in time and energy to deal with. And generally, the explosion means the end of the relationship. So don't accumulate combustible material about the other. Deal with the things as they come up. You know, create a healthy relation. That means healthy communication. That means seeing always what we share and try to respect the way that we share the things in a different way. That's the way, you know. Baba used to have court every day, remember? Why did he have court? So that the little things, you know, the Baba calls conflict, clash of sanskars, you know. The clash of sanskars. So if you deal with the little clashes every day, you'll never have a big clash. That's why he had the court. You know, Baba sometimes says, "Well, you know, it's like lapidation. You know, you put the stones in the together with water, and they're rubbing against each other, and they're rubbing against each other, the stones, so that they become polished." So service is a big lapidation machine. And we're rubbing against each other. In rubbing against each other, there will be clashes of sanskars. And Baba says, no, make it a dance of sanskars. You know, not clashes like that. So to do that, and Baba praises the sort of attitudes like the ability to mix, the ability to handle others. What does that mean? Handle others doesn't mean manipulate. Huh? Handle does not mean manipulation. Many people are very good through their words in manipulating others. That means the person end up doing what they want to do and not what Baba wants to happen. I've seen it, you know. Brahmins become little sort of, you know, they rebel because they're trying to be a model of someone that they're not. The manipulator does not allow someone to be who they are. The manipulator wants the person to be like they want them to be. Yeah. Like Henry Ford said, every time I want a pair of hands, why does a mind come together with them? I just want hands. I don't want thinkers. Of course, people are thinking beings. You've got a universe in front of you every time you open your mouth to talk to somebody. You're talking to a universe. And that universe isn't you. It's another universe. So the clash of sanskars is like clashing universes, right? So we need to understand that to get out of a conflict, stop seeing the defects. That's Baba's encouragement and guidance, and see what it is that you have in common. Try to see what it is that you share with that person. Maybe go back to the time when there was no conflict and when you were intoxicated together doing the service, let's say. And that's, you know, to communicate means literally to do that. To share the common, to share the common ground. That means to see the common ground first. That means to respect that even though it is a common ground, you'll come to it in a different way from the person or the universe who's in front of you. Now, the proof, as I said, of a good communication is that it is understood in a way that satisfies both parties. So it's a fascinating topic. It's our main instrument of connecting ourselves with others and with the world. It goes beyond just language, even though we have to get our language right. Especially the language that we use to talk to ourselves with. Because the essence of communication, of course, any virtue, in fact, any value starts with self. You know, respect starts with self-respect. Confidence starts with self-confidence. Communication with others starts with the way you communicate with yourself. So if you're telling yourself wrong things about situations and wrong things about people, that's also going to come out through your mouth. Oh, that person is terrible. You know, it'd be actually absolutely hilarious if we could see people's thoughts. You know, you go up to someone and say, look, this is my idea for service. And the person says, interesting. But of course, the person's thinking, what a stupid idea. What a complete waste of time. You know, but through the mouth it's coming very diplomatically, interesting. Imagine if we could see the thoughts as well, huh? How much more careful would we be about our thoughts? But in fact, the thoughts, you know, like in the cartoons, you can see the thoughts. The thoughts have more influence on the quality of the communication than the words do. So, what do I speak? When do I speak? How do I speak? Why do I speak? If I don't need to say anything, why do I open my mouth? Yeah. So if I get that right, I'll certainly speak less. I'm seeing Anthony sitting here. He had a good experience once. He said, I will only initiate a conversation if someone starts talking to me first. And of course, he spent a long time in silence. We have this urge to socialize through our mouths, you know, to feel part of. Why can't you be silent and feel a part of? Because if you don't get your silence right, you won't get your speaking right either. In fact, if you speak too much, you won't be able to be silent internally because of the karma, you know. You're sending out lots of useless things or wrong things or disrespectful things. Each one of those, you know, balloons that come out of your mouth come back to you, you know. It's karma, isn't it? You know, if you think, it comes back to you. If you speak, it comes back to you. If you do something, it comes back to you. So if you want it not to come back to you, don't let it out. I remember once talking to one of the seniors, and when I was new in Gyan, and you know, you're very like a little puppy dog. You sort of barking around the heels of the seniors, you know, with your bubbling intoxication. And I started to say something to one of the... She was visiting us, and this was in the early days in Australia. The centre, there were... Before Didi came to stay, really. We started a centre in Sydney. And from there, Australia took off. So she was visiting. I started to say something to her. I had the distinct impression that the words were coming out of my mouth and falling on the floor. They were absolutely useless words, you know. nothing to do with her, not relevant, not interesting, you know. And she was just there with an incredible smile on her face, waiting for me to say something significant. She gave up after a while. So be careful. Here in Madhavan, you have a great chance to experience the laboratory of your words. You know, how much impact they have. You know, if you imbue your words with love and softness, you will definitely make people feel glad when you're around. But if you imbue your words with doubt or fear or, you know, confusion maybe, people will feel uncomfortable to have you nearby. So if you've ever felt that you've not been included, it's probably because you've excluded yourself. Don't blame others. Yeah? Anyway, I had a few thoughts to share on this topic. And of course then you have all the virtues of communication, like being clear and being concise and being, you know, positive and so on in the way you communicate, the way you listen. You know, there are a big list of virtues of speaking and another big list of virtues for listening. And we have to have those virtues balanced. But before the virtues, the consciousness of what we communicate, why we communicate, when we communicate, how we communicate has to be sorted out. Okay? So, Om Shanti. If you've got anything to communicate, you can if you've got anything to add or to subtract or to your own inspiration, please feel free. We can use a few minutes to share amongst ourselves. Maybe we do an exercise, huh? Sit near the person next to you. Go near. Maybe in twos and threes. Go near to somebody. Move your chair. Not your chair. Move yourself. Sit near somebody. And think about the most significant thing, think about the most significant thing that you can say at this moment. Think about the most significant thing that you can say at this moment. Now, get in touch with Baba and think about the most significant thing that you can share with your brother or sister who's sitting next to you. Okay? Share something significant. Do it for a few minutes. Share something significant. Okay? Sweetly, softly, nicely, lovefully, respectfully, relevantly. Well, you've seen some people sharing silence. That's okay too, I suppose. If you can't speak the language, just look at them. Okay. Feeling good? Feeling okay? It's nice to talk about things that are important. Of course, the best communication of all is to be silent. Okay, looks like we're going for the silence.